What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the RCT Network. I'm Michael Key, and today I have a very, very good one for you. Allow me to first say this. I understand I'm not the best speaker in the world, and I understand I'm not the best video editor in the world, not even close. Very sporadic, have Tourette's, so I twitch. I'm very hard to listen to sometimes. However, please, 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 for today's video, you really need to watch all the way to the end for two reasons. The first one, the last time I spoke on this documentary, people watched for an average of 25% and they criticized me for things that I actually explained in the video, but they didn't even hear. Number two, I'm going to elaborate on one of Dr. Artis's theories and completely blow your mind. I promise you that there will be so many puzzle pieces that kind of come together, and it's going to be extremely eye-opening. I may only be a very small content creator, but what I have to say in this video is very, very mind-blowing. Now, I apologize if it appears like I'm not looking at you and I'm looking down. It's because I'm reading my notes, and I have quite a bit of them. Now, Dr. Brian Artis and Stu Peters have released the second part of their documentary, Watch the Water. The documentary discusses how COVID-19 was not actually an airborne virus, but instead a snake venom infection that was being spread throughout the public water supply. Artis also discusses how the vaccine and other treatments such as remdesivir are also made out of a synthetic venom, and that COVID-19 patients were being envenomated through these various methods. Now, in the first part of this drop last year, I did two videos laying out criticisms that I had of Dr. Artis and his theory. While the first two videos were probably my most successful videos on the channel, as far as viewership's concerned, you would have thought that I committed murder by criticizing and critiquing Artis's theory. Unfortunately, what people failed to see because of a YouTube violation was that I actually had Dr. Brian Artis on my show and did an hour and a half interview with him where I pressed him on a lot of my questions and inconsistencies that I saw in his hypothesis. It was an awesome discussion. And you can actually go and watch that episode on my Rumble account. I'll put the link in the description. But since YouTube took the video down because I had Artis actually on the video himself, I got criticized for my debunk videos and I didn't get people to see that I actually took the time to talk with him directly. Now I have two brief points to make before I get into the main part of my video. The first one, it's always been in my opinion that COVID was created and weaponized. YouTube, that's just my opinion. I'm not saying that with any kind of verifiable fact, okay? Just my opinion. So I'm not going to go further as far as questioning Artis's theory regarding if the virus was created by snake venom or not. However, that's not important to me. What is important to me is not how it's made, but rather where it was made, why it was made, and who funded it. My second point, when it comes to the water, I will question this part of the theory, and here's why. In my interview with Dr. Artis following his first part of the documentary, I explained to him that there were many people that do not live on city water and still got COVID. Furthermore, I expressed the point that there is no one with an immunity to venom or a synthetic venom, and if the virus was created using the method portrayed in Watch the Water, then it would have been built to get around most immunities that did exist in the first place. So why didn't everyone from city water supplies get sick within the first 2 weeks of the spread of COVID-19? Artis's answer to me was that while he maintains the belief that this is spread through water, his theory was based on a very, very, very basic observation, so basic, in fact, that he was extremely unhappy with Stu Peters for putting an emphasis on the idea and scaring people about our water system. So that is why I question how it was spread. Since it took so long, like myself, to get COVID, and when I got COVID, by the way, I'm fitting into this category where I was actually, for 3 weeks prior to that, out in the middle of nowhere camping and not on any kind of city or public water system. But I was with people who had the virus prior to coming camping, so there had to be some kind of contagious aspect to it. And Artis kind of blows off the fact that it was spread contagiously. A lot of you will say, oh, I'm focusing on the wrong idea with the entire video, but again, it really doesn't matter to me how the virus was made. It doesn't even matter to me how it was spread. In my opinion, it doesn't make a difference because unless doctors are going to start treating people differently based off of Artis's findings, who cares? What matters is if it was weaponized, what is the purpose? COVID-19 was deadly to severe to certain demographics of people, and for everyone else, it was little to nothing on the scale of illness. However, artist did mention something in his interview with me and brought it up again in part two of Watch the Water, and that was his theory on the motive behind COVID. And that is where the importance of the documentary really comes into play, in my opinion. I have long preached about the strain of Social Security and public health spending and what strain that has on our economy. Anyone that watches my content for more than 2 minutes knows that I am a finance and economics guy. I talk about this stuff all the time. Artist states that the vaccine and the virus were a method to depopulate and take strain off of our public welfare system. Social Security, Medicare, and other public welfare are the largest expenditures for the United States and are the largest expenditures for the majority of Western countries. We are currently having a standoff with our debt ceiling. Why is the debt increasing so fast? Well, because we spend so much money on things like Social Security. We often hear that Social Security is going to run out of money and that it is because we have a very large portion of our population, the baby boomers, that are retiring and not only collecting the benefits, but collecting benefits for far longer than ever anticipated due to a longer life expectancy. If you know how Social Security works, then you realize that the working class in America is funding Social Security payments to claimants through payroll taxes. The working class right now are paying into Social Security, and that money they're paying is being used to fund the current recipients of Social Security. It's not you pay into the fund, and then when you retire, you get the money that you paid into it. No, your money that you're paying into it right now is being used to pay the people who are getting it right now. That's where the issue lies. Since our retiring class is increasing at a much faster rate than our working class is, the government is not receiving funds needed to keep this system going. It is not just the retirement class that is putting a strain on Social Security, but also our rapidly growing disabled class as well, who can apply and receive money from SSI. So the theory that COVID was a way to lighten the burden and extend the life of public welfare makes a lot of sense, actually. Let's look at France, where they almost burned down Paris because people were so upset that the country was going to increase retirement age by 2 years in order to generate enough money to pay pensions. What do you think would happen in the US if politicians said that Social Security was going to be eliminated altogether? It would be political suicide, and everyone knows the main goal of a politician is to stay in office at all costs. However, where this theory has some kickback is the fact that baby boomers hold the largest share of income taxes compared to every other age group. In a report by Tax Foundation, which I love, by the way, great site, great source of information, they find that individuals over the age of 65, that total demographic, are responsible for over one-fifth of income taxes received by the government. This increased from 18% in 1997, so that burden on retirees or anyone over the age of 65 is actually growing. They're paying the largest share proportionately than any other demographic. This is due to them being the highest earning demographic, as well as the taxing of retirement funds and the lack of income credits that they are able to take advantage of, such as the earned income credit and the child tax credit. Baby boomers tend to be of the age where their kids are too old for them to claim them on their taxes and receive a child tax credit, right? The way our tax system works, they can't take advantage of a lot of these credits. So they're basically on the hook for a lot of the income taxes. So why would the government be so stupid to want to eliminate the largest source of revenue? Like I said, I worked in financial planning, and in 2016, the Secure Act was passed, and it carried a provision that changed the stretch IRA, which is an estate planning strategy that extends the tax-deferred basis of an IRA inherited by a non-spouse beneficiary. Allow me to explain this further. Many people today have 401ks, and the vast majority of this money is held as what is called qualified money. That means you receive a tax deduction on the front end when you make your original contribution into the account. But when you receive a distribution in retirement, you must pay income taxes on not just the original principal, but all the growth as well. So you reduce your taxable income up front when you're working because you're contributing to your 401k into the qualified account part, which the majority of money held in 401ks, even though they have Roth 401ks, the majority of it is held in the qualified tax deferred account. So you don't pay taxes now, you pay taxes later on all of it. This means that there are hundreds of billions of dollars that the government is waiting to tax but can't until the individual pulls the money out when they retire. Now, this doesn't have to happen until the age of 72. It was 70 and a half, the Secure Act for people born after a certain year can now wait until 72. At age 72, that's when the government forces you to start taking out a required minimum distribution because they need to tax the money. If you're getting bored with all this finance talk, Keep listening. I promise it's all going to come together. Now, once you retire from your job, you're typically going to roll your 401k out of your company's plan and into an IRA or some sort of product that can hold and potentially maximizes these qualified assets that you have. When you hear qualified, remember, hasn't been taxed yet, basically. Some of these individuals that have the most in qualified assets, so the ones with like the largest 401k accounts, also probably have the largest Social Security benefits. Why? Because they were higher earning individuals. They were able to fund more into their 401ks, but they also paid into Social Security at a much higher rate, and they could be capping out their Social Security benefit. They have more of a luxury, therefore, to postpone taking distributions from that qualified account until a later date, and not only forcing the government to wait even longer for the tax revenue, but also being on the hook for paying their Social Security in the meantime. So these individuals who are having higher Social Security payouts have the luxury of deferring the taxes in their qualified accounts even longer until the government at age 72 is going to start forcing them to take out at least some of that money. So they are now paying out to the largest demographic and starting to receive less and less from them, making the tax burden on a smaller and younger working class become extremely disproportionate. Now, what happens around age 72? You start getting very old and people start dying. Since many of these individuals still have large sums of untaxed money at the time of their death, financial planners like myself would utilize things like the stretch IRA to defer taxation even longer by stretching out distributions over the life of the person that receives these accounts after death, the non-spousal beneficiary, who is much younger, instead of the original RMD schedule held by the original account holder that is now dead. So you die, let's say in your 70s, and you never really took any money out of your qualified accounts, your 401ks and all your retirement stuff. That money gets passed down to your kids if your wife or husband is dead as well. We would then have your children taking out very, 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 very small distributions, if any at all, because we could take them out over the lifetime that they have, right, which is far more now than what yours was, instead of having to take it out on what your schedule was and take it out at a faster pace. Therefore, the government is still not able to receive tax revenue from these qualified assets anytime soon. And if they are receiving tax revenue from it, it's very, 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 very minimal, because by the time you die, you still have these qualified accounts that you inherited from your parents who are now dead, and you're going to pass yours and theirs down to your children. And it's just a cycle. In 2016, though, with the Secure Act, the government changed this loophole, and now the non-spousal beneficiaries of qualified assets must take out all of that qualified money within a period of 10 years, meaning that the government no longer has to wait to receive tax revenue from these accounts. Furthermore, there's another bonus for the IRS. Because qualified distributions are taxed as ordinary income, and the non-spousal beneficiaries of these accounts tend to be the children who, on average, would fall right into the highest earning time of their lives and the highest income tax paying demographic outside of the boomers themselves. So not only are the beneficiaries statistically going to be earning the highest taxable incomes, but they will have to add on top of their income a mandatory distribution in the amount specified by the government based on the value of the inherited qualified account, increasing the overall tax burden. The total income of the beneficiaries would be exorbitantly higher than their retired parents. And since we utilized a progressive tax code, the qualified money would potentially be taxed tenfold compared to what it would have been if the original account holder were taking regular RMDs. So as far as Brian Artis's theory on snake venom is concerned, who knows? But the claim he made on the reason behind it is 100% feasible and extremely possible, especially since due to modern medicine, life expectancy has increased vastly, and the government is only becoming more and more desperate to find funds to support a non-contributing class as far as production is concerned. Yeah, baby boomers spend the most money and have the largest share of economic activity, but redistributing the assets in a very strategic way, like forcing the very fast taxation of qualified assets after implementing a weaponized virus that had killed off a lot of these retirees, would give the government more ability to make up for lost demand through the use of government expenditures and increase the spending by the account beneficiaries themselves, which also increased tax revenue faster and for much longer. So the idea is that they had actually put policies into place regarding how ordinary people, because I'm not talking about the 1% here that have estate taxes. I am talking about ordinary, hardworking individuals that fund their retirement accounts that are not related to Social Security, put in a virus that really has a big toll on the population of retirees in the United States, which then lowers the strain on Social Security because less people are receiving benefits. Because once you die, your kids don't receive benefits. It also speeds up and increases by quite a lot the taxation of all the money these people hold in their retirement accounts. That would increase revenues by default, vastly increase revenues by default, and allows them to basically have more money to spend. They can substitute demand where demand is lost and keep this scam of Social Security going longer, which then is politically favorable to them because they can keep that promise, that welfare promise that you have in retirement, that you're going to have this Social Security payout. The other thing I believe is that COVID was also done in a way to experiment with control. It was a way to not be too deadly, but enough to implement regulation and societal control to see how far they can actually push people before they start to protest and go against the government. You think about it, no one overthrew the government in the US. No one overthrew the government really anywhere due to COVID. And now the government knows how far they can go as far as control on the population. They also know that they could probably push it even a little bit further because nothing happened. Hell, people were protesting over George Floyd during COVID. They weren't even protesting the COVID policies. They were in some countries like Australia and New Zealand. But other than that, no one really said anything. They just complained about it. So again, I don't know how accurate Artis's ideas are regarding the venom part, but really, who cares?